it going, bro?
What's up, man? So
it's been a minute.
Yeah, it's been a good little fucking minute since we've been together, man.
Like a Tinder date, you dished me. It's
completely unacceptable. So for everybody who doesn't know, who's listening to the podcast and listening up here on YouTube, this is a good friend of mine. We actually work together at 24 Hour Fitness. Ironically, it's the building right next to us. And man, I'm pleasure to have you here, bro, because I know your background already into the military. So I was like, man, I got to have you as a guest. So for people who don't know you, introduce yourself, man.
My name is Gino Marquez. Man, that's all I want to say. No, you know, I was in the military long before the hectic stuff got in. I joined in 96. I got out, kind of a brief little thing, got out. I knew I wanted to be in law enforcement. I didn't know how to do about it, right? Again, this is 20-some years ago. There's like, internet was starting up, but it wasn't there. So trying to find out how to go about doing things and learning about certain things, it was very limited. So pretty much your career went in the direction of someone you knew, right?
It's just,
20 years ago, when you got into the military, you're like, dude, what job am I going to pick, right? And you had these huge freaking laser disc. And they put it in the machine, you're like, oh, that looks cool. There was no internet to find out, like, oh, man, I think I'd be good at this or this and this. Nevertheless, I knew I wanted to go in law enforcement. I didn't know how I was going about it. I didn't know how or even if I can pass the test to become an officer. But long story short, I became a correctional officer.
Okay.
And I did that for just over 15 years and then retired.
Love it, man. Love it. What, for me, I'm always fascinated, right? Like, quick story of mine. What got me to go in the military and the army? I was fucking bored here. But then, of course, what always stuck to me was seeing 9/11 when I was in fourth grade. That, even though as young as I was, it still implemented something on me. Mm-hmm. I was like, all right, I really want to serve my country. Before I really exploit it, I want to make sure I give back to my country first. For some reason, it just really, it did touch me. That was my reason for going to the military. I wanted to be a grunt. I wanted, like, I don't give a fuck. Let me serve frontline. I want to leave tomorrow. I was like, well, you got to be 18 first, and then you'll go. Mm-hmm. It happened. What made you want to, like, what was it for you?
Wow. That story is a story in itself, but nevertheless, I had a very, very rough upbringing. My father's from Watts. My mom's from SGV, San Gabriel Valley here in California. But my father did 3 tours in Vietnam.
Oh, wow.
So from I was knee high to a grasshopper, I always wanted to be in the army.
Mm-hmm.
And then compounded with having such a rough life, my dad ended up becoming, after he got out, he worked for the post office and I think statute of limitations, right? So, he was actually one of the biggest drug runners in LA County.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So while he worked for the post office, he was delivering with the postal van.
Man, he's just goods. Giving the delivery right there.
So my life was, we moved a lot, very fast pace, moved a lot, very fast paced. Mm-hmm. And I just, my upbringing kind of reinforced being in the military. Even at such a young age, I understood stability was there. Mm-hmm. I had this fascination of plain army, you know, back in the 80s, we don't have what we have now, right? And that's where my brain was. My parents end up leaving me on a doorstep, at our very own doorstep. And that, you don't get it when you're in second grade and you come home and your house is empty, the door's locked. You just think like, oh, they're going to come back, right? Like, oh, that's, it's normal. We've been moving so much. Dad probably got caught up again. Yeah, they'll come and get me. They never came back.
Oh, wow.
So you learn something's weird. Something's off. You can't, it's such a young age, you can't put a finger on it. But now you're on your own. Mm-hmm. And my neighbors end up literally taking me in.
Was that different for you? Like going to your neighbors, was it more of, looking back now, was it more of like, oh, well, I guess I'm just living here until they come back?
Or, yeah.
Got you.
You're 6 years old. You're not, you have no fathom of like, oh, my parents just 1, 2, 3 ditched me, dude. Yeah. Like, no. So it's just like, all right, well, they were seeing me. I passed out. I did my homework. I passed out. Bancho, he came, you can see him looking through the windows. And I'm pretty sure they're like, what do? We can't just leave this little booger just sitting on the porch, you know? So they end up coming over and they're like, oh, mijo, come have dinner. All right.
And just stayed
there. And that was it. They gave me a room and I stayed there. That's and crazy, years went by. But that instilled me knowing I had to do things on my own, mm-hmm. right? Fast forward some years, my parents end up finding me again.
How old are you?
How old currently?
No, at that time when they found you?
So I was like second grade, I think what, that's seven.
Seven.
I didn't find them, or they didn't come get me until I was like 10, 11.
Okay.
Yeah.
Some good years passing by there.
Sometime, yeah. And I briefly remember them showing up one time, mm-hmm. and I ran to the room like, yeah, peace, dogs, I'm out of here.
Yeah, yeah.
Nice knowing you, thanks for taking care of me. Came back out and they're poof, gone. So I'm pretty sure they struck some kind of deal with Sandy and Poncho. And so as school went by, the years went by, I was really kind of raised by my grandmother and still fascinated by my grandfather. At the time, I would hear stories. He had joined World War II when he was 14 years old, right? Wow. His oldest, he was, I believe, the youngest of six. His oldest brother died in the beginning of the war, so he used his brother's name and social
to get
and
in there.
Joined. Then when he turned 17, the Navy found out and they kicked him out because he was too young, but he had already served 3 years. I have a lot of family that entered the military, and it just, again, it just kept growing, reinforcing everything. And then I remember living back with my parents, and my dad worked for this company called National Security. And what they did was they tested out bulletproof glass. And that was my first time putting my hands on a weapon. And that day, it was like, for me, it was mind-changing. I mean, I was shooting a MAC-10, right? I was shooting an original M16 and M1 shotguns. Just, we went out shooting like just clay and whatnot, but to just rattle off rounds, we were shooting this bulletproof glass.
Yeah, especially to people who've never shot that and you're experiencing that difference. It's kind of like, oh, wow, a little high in a sense. And yeah, then, I got that even with like a little BB gun.
Yeah, so for me, it was just like, oh, this is it. And my dad was like, he saw it in my eyes. He was like, you're too good at this. And I was like, yeah. So graduated high school in 96. And a month later, I was at Fort Knox, Kentucky. Oh, wow. I enlisted as a tanker, 19 kilo.
Nice.
The original Disney barracks. Horrible, horrible. But yeah, that's what really drove me in. And then once I got in the Army, it's funny. If you've been in the Army, there's an Army God, right? And when you get in, they either take care of you or they don't.
There's no
you
between.
Can be the most amazing no Audie Murphy individual in the world, but if they don't want you there and they don't like you,
yep,
you're freaking gone, dude. So and I true. Was very fortunate, always at the right place, right time. And my basic training... I always reflect back on it. Now that my youngest wants to join, my oldest is in the Navy.
I remember you telling me about that when we worked together.
Yeah, yeah. My youngest wants to join the Army. And I reflect back on basic training. And it was very similar to the movies we watched growing up. I had a blast. Although they hit us. You know, I got the taste of the old school.
Yeah, you got the old school. Yeah. I didn't. 2010, I'm going to be honest. It was, I think I still got parts of where it was like still tough.
Mm-hmm.
Where they would definitely still be in your face, especially because mine was still all grunts in there. It wasn't kind of mixed, is what I'm hearing with some people when they have basic training now. It's male and female doing the kind of cadre. Me, no. They were like in your face. They just got back from a tour and they're on the line, as they like to say. But yeah, that's a difference I didn't get experience.
Yeah, so we were experimental. From what I understand, after speaking to the drill sergeant when we graduated, Fort Knox was testing out and I believe, isn't it Benny or Stewart that does infantry?
Benny.
Mm-hmm. They're testing out this new thing. So depending on the time you came into the basic training, you were either going from low stress to extreme, extreme to low, extreme the whole time, medium. So they were trying to see what developed the best soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
We went from high stress to extreme, right? The barracks next to us was extreme. They stayed extreme.
Oh, wow.
we would hear those kids getting beaten damn near every night. Us, it...
Before you go on, for people who are listening and here and there on YouTube, when he's meaning beaten out, not like, he beat me like with something small. No, like legit.
Hands on, getting smacked in the mouth, kicked. We had this drill sergeant Mays. Fuck you if you're out there. This mother son of a, I'll never forget. I don't know what the procedures are now, but we would march to the chow hall line and be like, last man, get the door. And I was always the last man, right? So you run up and you hold the door for all your boys, right? And I'll never forget, like, what's up, homie? What's up, homie? And he came up and he, and like, I'm still like dabbing my boys. And everybody's like, no, they're trying to give me like the look, like, stop, don't. And me, just, what's up? And I'll never forget. He's like, oh, how you doing, Mr. Marquez? I see your file. You're American Indian. I was like, yes, your son. He goes, I suspect you're part of a tribe in, I don't know, West Coast somewhere. I was like, yeah. He goes, is it the Slapaho tribe? And I was just like, oh. And as he said that, he freaking just dinged me in my nuts, right? So I'm on the floor, I'm holding the door. He was like, motherfucker, if that door touches me, I'm going to stomp your ass in. And I was just screaming, ah. And ever since then, every day, he was putting hands on me. I mean hands on me. But, yeah, basic training was amazing. I loved it. It was absolutely the stories.
That's one thing that compared to, I mean, my cousins and some of my friends who want to be, I met them at 24 and I asked them, I always ask them no matter what, how's your basic? Oh, dude, so easy is this. And I tell them my stories. They're like, dude, you had it intense, man. I used a stress card just in case. I was like, dude, shut the fuck up. So even comparing it to mine. And I was talking to Ian, the guy I had talked to last week about on the podcast. Compared to now, it's so different. And I had fond memories, man. It was definitely in your face. Still, I think, so interesting from yours. Because I think that's really, they were starting their cycles like that. That's when they really started like, oh, red phase. That's how they broke it down.
So, I guess the phase before me at Leonard Wood was the first time they integrated. They allowed females to be with male drill sergeants. Like, two females got knocked up, right? The next year, I believe, is when the Navy started the stress card thing. I couldn't have never imagined being in that kind of base training. Although mine was hard, I got smoked, I got smacked up. Like, it truly filtered out individuals. And it also, in an odd way, brought confidence to individuals. Like, as horrible as something can be, there's still a way to rise in the difficulty. And you see, you see these individuals and they're just like these pelly kids, never seen outside, right? And you're like, I don't know how this cat's gonna make it, right?
Yeah, that's true.
I'll never forget, we had this one kid, Private Kenny Piles. Yes.
Wow.
Big ears under.
Ironic.
And, right? We actually had a private joint and a private parts, too.
That's hilarious.
Yes.
That is fucking hilarious. Best
names. Nevertheless, frail kid. Frail. One of the craziest, most dangerous little dudes I've ever met. Like, I would not trust him at all. But I loved him to death, right? But it truly molds individuals in generally in the right direction.
Definitely does. I think even the downside, right, compared to now where the Army, the Navy, pretty much all the branches have downgraded in the sense where, oh, okay, let's make the branch a little bit smaller. We don't really need to be in time of war right now. And right now, revamping it is definitely, they're waiting out in the sense like, oh, well, you just passed the push-ups. Get in here. You're good to go. I mean, when I joined, it was like you had to be in shape. Like, no, motherfucker, if you didn't, you can't do 42 push-ups, get the fuck out of here.
You're getting recycled.
Oh, easy. Like, easy. Snap. There wasn't you don't get a time to do again. No, fuck no, you. You're recycling. Yeah.
I remember we had a private white. They ended up bringing him in like the third week. We had OSIT training. I don't know if anybody, one-stop training, right? So at that time, it was only tankers and only infantry that got OSIT training. So we ended up getting this guy, Private White, I believe third, fourth weekend, and he was his fourth recycle.
Damn.
Yeah, he ended up committing suicide in...
Oh, my God.
Yeah. He ended up... I'm pretty sure you guys have heard stories, but like he literally tied an extension cord around his neck. and threw the buffer, the floor buffer, out the window.
Whoa. Yeah. I'm trying to think. No, I don't, from my knowledge at least, from when I did basic training, I don't remember anybody doing that. We had a lot of dudes who were the opposite. Right, you say that the most skinny ones are like, oh, we're probably gonna make it, or not, and then they want to be really good. The opposite dudes. I had some big dudes, like in shape, the biggest bitches I've ever fucking met, man. Like, oh my god, they were just chilling there, and I love when Joe starts to fuck with them. It's like, what the fuck are you doing, bro? It's like, oh, I'm, what do you mean? It's like, why are you just there? Are you leaving? Are you getting out of the army? He's like, yeah. I was like, why? I'm depressed. You're depressed? What the fuck do you do? What have you done?
Yeah.
And just to see their faces just break down, it's crazy how that weeds them out, exactly how you said. And going down the line, when I went to deployment, I was like, damn, people broke in there. And I saw grown men who served in like the beginning of the war. When I served over there in Afghanistan, grown men who like broke down. Like, it was the worst fighting they said they've ever had. And it just shocks me, like, damn, even all your training, somehow you still become bitch. It's crazy. It's crazy how
you just always fall back in the lowest form of training. Always.
It's true.
And it's always, you'll see the ones that needed the most emotional support didn't ask for it.
Hands down.
And that's kind of a cool thing now that you bring it up, is like, even during the basic training, you'll see some of us that weren't the toughest, but we spoke like, man, I'm a bitch. And what got us through all of it is exactly what you laughed about it.
Yeah.
And that becomes dangerous though, because now everything becomes funny. Now you get tortured even more, and then the drill sergeants hate you even more because you realize, okay, they can't kill me. They're going to take me to the point of being dead, but did you die?
Like, exactly.
And then stuff starts getting dangerous, right? You're like, okay, I can get away with this, and then you get smoked, and you're just like, but I didn't die, though. Like, you're crawling back to your room. I'll never forget. I got smoked for 6 hours. We were smuggling in candy. Right? Oh, yeah. We had Red. His name was Sergeant Red. He was actually a Marine. And that's kind of a side story. He was awesome. But he was transferring into the Army as a teenager. And so he didn't have to deal with all the BS. He just had to do the schooling portion. Mm-hmm. So we would side him some money, he'd go to the little shopette, smuggle some candy. Drill sergeant found out, and we got smoked for 6 hours. But like, I'll never forget, I'm crawling out, sweating. My boys were pulling me, and it was just like, okay, what do we do next? Because the stress,
the fucking repercussions.
Like, yeah, because it got to the point where the Army at the time mandated that you can only have, or they only need to give you 4 hours of sleep. But it didn't say 4 consecutive hours.
Very true.
Right?
Very true.
So they would get to the point where they're so mad at us, they were torturous, they would like let us sleep for an hour, then we'd have fire guard or get smoked, right? And then get an hour of sleep. And it just became fun. It literally became, how much can you torture your drill sergeant before he kills you?
I think I got that after coming back from deployment. So I didn't get that much in basic training. Because they didn't fucking stop. But I got that kind of, what you're talking about, like fucking with them, once I was in my unit. So I was stationed in Fort Bragg, North Carolina. Mm-hmm. After you came back from deployment, yeah, the whole fucking time. Any lieutenant, any fucking colonel, we didn't give a fuck, dude. We just fuck with them. I remember one time, with an officer, people listening in, when you see an officer, somebody who's commissioned, salute. When they're coming out. So what we did to always fuck with them, we'd line up like I think it was like every 5 feet you have to salute them or something like that if there's somebody next to you. So we did that. We just had a whole fucking line. All the way, sir. He's like, all right. He kept doing it. He just started laughing. He's like, all right, you motherfuckers. And he just wanted him coming back. He's like, oh, you motherfuckers, start pushing. But we didn't care, dude. We were just fucking with them.
Yeah. Dude. I'm very fortunate. Even till now, I'm still friends with some of the guys I went to. I lost contact with the people I went to basic training with. But there was, so at the Disney Barracks, for you guys that don't know, they're brick at Kentucky, right? So they would use a piece of drywall and they would cut the barracks literally in half. So you'd have one company here, another company on this side. And I ended up becoming very good friends with two of the guys. Although we're different companies, we graduated the same day, or I think within days of each other. And then we all got shipped to Fort Riley, Kansas with 1st 13th Armor. Gotcha. So I'm still friends with them. And even kind of segue off of what we're talking about, it's like the people that you would never imagine to stay in mm-hmm. are the ones to stay in. The or ones that you think are going to stay in are always the first ones to get out.
Yeah.
Right? Well, I like, matter of fact, me and one of my boys, Archie, I think he may have reenlisted once, but we both dipped out.
Mm-hmm.
There's one individual, Anthony Kuhn. He was that one guy that's absolutely crazy, uncontainable,
mm-hmm.
just out of control. He ended up staying in.
Damn.
Sergeant, I believe he hit Sergeant Major.
Oh, wow.
I think he got at least one Purple Heart, did several tours in Iraq, and it's always crazy to see that happen, right? And then, of course, you know, I find out people that had passed away during the war.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, didn't go. I got out of the Army, I believe it was the end of
99. Mm-hmm. Right at the brink, right before, man.
Yeah. I was in Korea. I stayed there for a little longer. But by the time I was already stateside, and I was in National Guard.
Mm-hmm.
I was attached to 185th Armor out of San Bernardino.
Mm-hmm.
And if my unit was better, I would have went. But they were so undertrained. But that's old Army. So like a lot of people don't understand. About 2000, 2005, the Army was transitioning from the old Army to the new Army.
Yeah.
So the old Army, you would have a specialist that was like 20 some years as an E4, right? And never seen anything, never did training, never really been to a gunnery. And that's what I had at 185th.
Oh, wow.
It was utterly horrible. I had asked them, like, you know, I was the only active dude that had hit that National Guard in, I believe, 10 years.
Oh, wow.
So I was like, hey, what about this? And they're like, yeah, we don't do that. I was like, when do we see our tanks? And they're like, oh, we still got M1s that shoot 105s, not the 120s. I was like, okay, like that sucks, but, you know, when do we get to see them? Oh, our tanks are like 100 miles into LA. Like, they're far. So what are we doing? Literally, 6, 7 months later, 9/11 hit.
Damn.
And they're like, you going? I was like, not with you guys. I was like, when I go to war, I want a fighting chance.
Oh, hell yeah.
Give me something to work with. And sadly, from what I understand, that unit took a great hit of losses within the first 5 months.
Damn.
And it was all due to training. And it still irks me till this day that I just didn't go and try to transfer into a different unit.
Mm-hmm.
But back then, you couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't just be like, hey, I want to try, you know, 336 Armor out of Stewart, or I think they're out of Vanny. You couldn't do that.
A lot of people don't realize, people listening in, and it's probably even changed now for anybody who's still in the military for whatever branch, especially in the Army. Yeah, when I was in, that was actually something you could actually even re-enlist for. Like, hey, I'll give you another 2 years if you put me into this troop and this brigade and blah, blah, blah. They're like, all right, cool, done. No hesitations. You could always do that. So, yeah, it wasn't as easy as you said of that. Even in my time, you had to fight for it. Like, all right, what can I give you? How many years I got to give you to get this? It's crazy. Fast forward a little bit with your military career over and everything. Talk about transition to your law enforcement.
Ooh. Well, got out. And became a beer salesman. Loved it. Worked for Stater Brothers as a meat cutter. Love that job. I still think that's like one of my best jobs ever. But I quickly found my son's mother and her older sister. Fucking love that woman. She worked for the Department of Corrections.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, hey, if you're going to be with my sister, you got to bring in some cheddar. And I was a beer seller. I was only like 22 years old, 23 years old. And I was just, I'm making pretty damn good money right now. I was like, what are you talking about? You need stability. All right. So back then, I just filled out this little postcard and sent it off.
Yeah, yeah.
And she said it usually took like a year to get a reply. From the time I sent my postcard out, I was in the academy 3 months later. Damn. I have top secret clearance. I didn't have a background because I joined the Army at 17. Mm-hmm. So it's just like 17, top secret clearance, get out. Like, so it's quick and easy. Joined the Department of Corrections, you know? At first, I didn't even know what it was. She was like, yeah, I work in the prisons. I was like, sheriff? Like a jail? She's like, no, stupid ass. Like, state prison. I was like, all right, whatever. Joined the Department of Corrections. And I was very fortunate. Again, right place, right time. And you learn that the department has a group called CERT team. Mm-hmm. Pretty much for layman terms, SWAT team, right? Mm-hmm. Special emergency response teams or special weapons and tactics. And I heard about this team before I even got to my first prison, which was Salinas Valley State Prison. And I remember getting there and I applied to get on the team. And they told me, hell no, you're new booty. And I was like, yeah, I've been very fortunate. I was in the Army. I had some really cool training. I was trained by some group guys for some of the jobs I did when I was in the Army. But I was not a know-it-all, but I was very familiar with a lot of tactics, entries, driving, EVOC. So I got denied 11 times.
Damn.
I sent a memo in every week. Shit. Right. And it got to the point where they had heard that I can run a mile in 4 minutes and 30 seconds. And to mess with me, they're like, all right, you can try out, but you got to run in boots and utes. I was like, all day. And I ran a 4:45.
Damn.
And my first mile, so it's a mile and a half. So I think I pumped out like a 5:20 for a mile and a half. And they're like, okay, well, you try out. I was like, sweet. Tried out for this team. And out of, I believe, 30 of us tried out that day, I was the only one left.
Damn.
Yeah. And
that's a really good, it's funny how I make it sound, but it's a really good turnover to see, like, exactly how you're talking about the Army. To eat out the week and everything.
To eat everybody out, right? And for you individuals that are in and or want to go in law enforcement, it's a bunch of bullshit.
Elaborate. You have to elaborate.
So, you got a bunch of wannabe alpha males. Mm-hmm. That assume, think, or want to be something or act a certain way because they're in a certain position. And that kind of applies to everything, but especially with law enforcement, you get a lot of that. Or I was this, so I'm going to act this way. Me being who I am, I don't play well with others when they don't want to play by the rules. Mm-hmm. So, nevertheless, I always kept that in the back of my mind. But you meet a lot of individuals that play something that they're not. And when I got on the team, I finally got on the team, I was the second youngest ever to graduate state certification.
All right. When you graduated?
I just turned 22.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So being on that team, very fortunate. That team was the number one team in the state. We did mutual aid, which branched off into some interesting adventures, to say the least. We're very fortunate. We got top-notch training. We started training with outside agencies. Due to the 9/11, a lot of these smaller jurisdictions fell under the mutual aid agreement. So a lot of people don't understand, not every police department has a SWAT team. They might have two, maybe even one certified SWAT guy, but they will team up with a local jurisdiction. So if you have like five jurisdictions and one in a 30-mile radius, then you might have two, or whatever it comes out, and then you got a part-time team.
Gotcha.
So we're very fortunate. We started doing search warrants on the outside, but they all had to have a nexus into the prison to allow us to go there. And I got to start doing what I want, you know, start busting down doors, and that turned into being discovered by another group that my team at the time didn't even know I was being looked at. I got to work on the side with them. oddly, they weren't allowed to know. Come to find out, a couple of the guys on the team were compromised. So they were good for local, but not good for a bigger spectrum of operations. So for me, it was kind of hard because I had to play a part, which got me kicked off my original team several times. Mm-hmm. So I can engage and interact with the bigger team. But the cool thing about that is, like, I was discovered by 5'11". I got to work with them. Matt Frederick, love you if you ever watch this. he is the creative director for 5'11", and was at the time, and I believe still is.
People don't know Tactical 5'11".
Tactical 5'11", the pants, all that good stuff. So I got to work with them. I started working with Los Alamitos Sheriff Department. I started working with Homeland Security. And it was kind of funny is my team at the time, as full of shit as they were, I would bring them opportunities to do amazing training, and they never caught on, right? We didn't have the most accessible, all the money to get cool training, right? Mm-hmm. And I would always tell them, hey, I got us an airplane with Southwest to go do entries on an airplane. I'm a nobody.
Yeah.
But they weren't putting things together. Like, how is this little nobody getting us these options, these abilities to do so? So they never took up on it. You know what I mean? They kind of screwed themselves because of the machismo.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They weren't the ones bringing in everything, right? Yeah. And that's where that...
Well, I got to listen to this guy.
Yeah.
Longer than him.
And it was like, hey, here's an option. Let's take it. Let's get some training. No, we can't do it. Hey, all the equipment's provided. We just got to show up. No. And I did that 6 or 7 times, and I just kept on getting shot down. And she's like, all right. I can't tell you how I'm getting this or why I'm getting you this, but I'm getting you this. But because they weren't the one presenting it to the table, they shitted on it.
It's crazy, man. It's a thing that not just men, right? Everybody in general just has that stigma of pride where no matter if you're a businessman, you're in the military, when you're in mm-hmm. doing your job, of course, it's just that bravado. Everybody has it. It's like, fuck that, man. I've been doing this for 15 years. How is this fucking nobody going to do this and this, and he's not going to tell me? Mm-hmm. It's that little stench that people have.
And sadly, with my team, that's how it went. I bring ideas, what I learned in the past, what I was currently learning. All my money I made, I put into going to different schools. Mm-hmm. You know, they're drinking beer and doing whatever they want to do. I just sent myself to different schools. And I ended up becoming the outcast because I didn't follow the grain. Right.
Was it ever hard for you?
Yeah, it was definitely hard. A couple of these guys, I looked at his family. Mm-hmm. I loved him. One of the guys I had a falling out with, I loved that dude. He was my boy, but he had a goal. You know what I mean? He had a frame of mind of which he wanted to go in, and I wasn't a very influential individual. Mm-hmm. Nor did I want to be. I just wanted to help other people broaden their horizons, open their minds. Like, you know tactics. I know tactics. But it's like water. It's continuously changing. It's continuously fluid. And you get these individuals stuck in a frame of mind. And it's what kills teams, you know.
So true. And it's sad that a lot of people get stuck in those ways just because when that time comes and those people get so stuck in their ways and shit hits the fan, those same motherfuckers who don't want to change either wind up fucking dying first, or they're the same motherfuckers who wind up being in the corner crying with their weapon, which I've seen.
And it sucked. You know, it just became one of those things. It is what it is. And sadly, I had a falling out with quite a few of them. And I ended up transferring out and going to a different prison. But yeah.
On that topic, how many prisons did you go to?
I was at 2. I was at Salinas, and I came here down to San Diego to RJD, but I was very fortunate. I trained at an abundance of prisons. I helped up-train other officers, help with other teams and whatnot. I've helped up-train PDs. Whatnot, but just the prison career in itself is mind blowing. that in itself is a whole different podcast.
I mean, which I'm going to get to that later. I want that to be a different podcast. I don't want you spilling everything.
Oh, my God.
Because that's a whole different topic.
Stories out of that, dude. Oh, my God. Yeah. Statues of limitations.
No.
Statues of limitations.
For me, I'm always intrigued, right, where a lot of people ask me, it's like, oh, what's the meaning of the podcast? It's definitely a podcast for you, veterans, active duty members, who's transitioned out of the military and did a career and stories to tell. So many stories to tell that have molded you without really knowing it. I always look back in the military like, man, it definitely provided me to become the man I am without even knowing it, without even knowing that I was trying to be this next person. What was, from when you can tell me, of course, what was your lowest? Transitioning from the military to you're now in this new position, you're training people, you're doing all those crazy things. What was your lowest point?
Almost calling a 1-800 number. Man, I get goosebumps just talking about it. It's like when you do something your whole life, when you have a childhood as similar or close or relatively near it as mine, and then you gear yourself to the military thinking that you're going to turn it into a career, and you sadly leave for whatever option it is, and then you get into law enforcement, which brings back the camaraderie that you believe is there, mm-hmm. and you devote yourself to a department, a way of thinking. That way of thinking changes you. It not only changes you in positive ways, it changes you in negative ways. For me, I can speak, I gave up a lot of my life, devoted to the department, assuming and thinking that I was going to be there forever. I was going to be a part of the CERT program until the day I retired. But as things gradually left, and you alternate your direction, right? So one of the kind of things was, I had spoken about 511. I was very fortunate. I got to work with him, you know. So on the side, I was doing a bunch of modeling, and then I was very fortunate. I got to do some of the designing, which is a whole new segue, right? But when you retire, mind you, all this is happening. It'll make sense, but it's happening prior to social media. Right? So your influence or your ability to contact people isn't like what it is now.
Still true.
Right? It's all word of mouth. And the tactical community, the apparel community, the gear community is so close-knit, very, very small. When I left the department, I lost everything. Literally. You lose who you are. Right? You leave your career now, it's not so bad. Even for people in the military jumping back out, social media is such a negative thing, but yet it is such a good thing, right? Because now it gives you the ability to reach out, to touch and communicate and cross-platform with people and do what we're doing now. I didn't have this when I got out, right? It's been 6 years, right? It was hard. You lose who you are. You're not getting up at 04. You're not working out. You're not busting out 16-hour days anymore. Your mind isn't preoccupied. It was rough.
Definitely, I can relate so much. A lot of people actually don't know this. I don't even think my little sister knows this. So,
close your ears. Close your ears.
But yeah, I was there. I was there, man. Literally transitioning out of the military. I was gung-ho. I was a grunt. I was like, man, I'm going to do 20 years. Me and you both know any fucking job. Promise you shit. Don't want getting it. I was done. I was like, all right, cool. I'm going to transition. I'm going to be good. I had a mindset like, oh, I'm good. I'm good with what I did. No, I wasn't. I was so depressed. I was used to still waking up. My little sister can even say it here. I wouldn't go sleep. For the longest time, I think I didn't sleep for a whole fucking year, dude. Like, maybe an hour or two. And it was just because of exhaustion that I would just knock out. And, yeah, I came that close. I came that close to not even calling the number, just doing it. I came that close. It was definitely a deep time for me where I felt the closeness that people can relate to where, wow, transitioning, for a lot of people don't realize that you feel so accomplished. You feel like you have all these things. Going back on the whole bravado, right? It's a brotherhood that you always have, a family that you always have, always will have to this day, no matter what. And to lose that all of a sudden, and to try to relate to somebody who, especially nowadays, you say the wrong thing.
Oh,
fuck you, man. Like, yeah. Hey, fuck this guy. Like, I'm never relating to this guy ever again. And it burns so many bridges nowadays. Not when we were in and what we were used to. We could say something and we'd laugh about it. It could be the darkest shit ever and laugh about it. Because that's how we were. That transition was so different for me. I relate so much to that. And I think the biggest thing that can help people is exactly what you said, right? Having that social media. And a thing for me is that I want to do that podcast and have you on here and more guests like this talk. I think the biggest thing that we do, not just as men, but anybody in general who's saying some fucked up shit, is not talk. You don't have to talk about exactly what you did. Just talk. It has helped me so much be more the person I am, to where I have no problem. I have no problem talking about what happened, who I serve with and shit like that. I commend you, bro. I'm sorry you went through that. I've been there. It sucks.
Yeah, you know what? But I'm happy I got through it. And it just builds back to, it's kind of weird. Again, it all falls back to that day my parents left me. Mm-hmm. It's either I just shit my pants and do nothing about it, or, you know, you do something about it. For some people, they just up and over it like that. And for me, it took me a couple of years to reconsolidate, start looking for different avenues of approach. And even till this day, it's still hard for me to work in the civilian atmosphere. As you know,
oh, yeah.
I don't play well with others. I can do things, but I'm not fake.
Mm-hmm.
And the civilian world, and a great portion of jobs in the civilian world, require you to be fake.
Yep, so true.
And that, I just can't do it. I just can't do it. So I've struggled, you know, with just mediocre jobs here and there, you know. I mean, I worked for an off-road company and damn near choked my manager out, right? When you're taking pictures of underage females, right?
Oh, wow.
It's hard, you know what I mean? I think now I've gotten better at it, but I'm still not there. Trying to put in like nice terms, right?
Be as blunt as you fucking want.
No, I can't fucking do certain things. I bluntly just can't do them, you know. Staying to myself.
Mm-hmm.
People say become more sociable.
Mm-hmm.
That's hard. With you, I can probably, we can talk about some outlandish crazy shit.
I told my sister, like, hey, be careful. You might hear some
I've
shit.
Always said that, like, be careful what you ask me, because I am going to say some outlandish shit. And nowadays, it's like you say, it's socially unacceptable. And yeah, it sucks, because what happens with military people, and I can even say law enforcement and whatnot, you end up staying to yourself, and it's a good thing because you're out of trouble. Mm-hmm. But the bad thing is now you have no outlet, right? Yeah. It's not necessarily the social outlet, but you don't have the communication with another individual. Mm-hmm. As bonkers and silly as you are. And for me, that's big. Like, laughter for me has gotten me over so much stuff. But to find individuals you can do that with comfortably,
that's rare,
is the hard part, right? That's the real hard part. I think over time, like me, I've kind of lined up a little bit. I try to sugarcoat things as much as possible, but
a lot of people to relate, right? I don't hold back shit. I know when to fake it, like you said, right? When to fucking do that. I just always look it up to when I was in the military, when the higher ups come in. I just relate to, all right, what the fuck do they want to hear? And that's all I'm going to give them. And then I'm going to give you the real 100. So I remember, I'll never forget, you kind of quoted to our mutual friend and coworker, Jose. It's like, hey, I'm about to give you a talk. It's more of like, hey, I got to talk to you.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, this is just business. Shut the fuck up. You just do what the fuck you got to do. And I'm always like that. And I think I've gotten so many, like, dude, I thought you were an asshole. I thought you were this. I thought you were this bitch. Like, I didn't fucking like you. You were stuck up. I was like, no, I'm just being me. And a lot of people can't relate to honesty. They hate honesty. Like, I got to put this clown-ass mask to fucking Ben. I was like, no, I'm not going to do that. I've gotten better at doing that too as well, to fake it in a certain way. Yeah.
When I was in the Army, I never learned that. I worked directly with a couple of colonels and even a general, and even them, I would mouth off.
Like, which, like, people listening, you're not fucking supposed to do.
And they would threaten my life. They would threaten my job. And I'm like, I don't care. Like, your rule with me, you put your chonies on just like I do, one leg at a time. Sometimes you get a little squirrely and you jump off the bed and you do a double, right?
Right, it happens.
But you're no different than I am. Mm-hmm. And I took that into the department, and that got me in even more trouble because I'm really big on policy and procedure. Like, even when I was in the Army, AR-670-1, I knew that.
Best friend.
Here's a funny little story. I'll never forget. We had Command Sergeant Major Story at our 1st 13th Army. He came from infantry. He was RCSM. And he loved fucking with me. And he was like, hey, tomorrow I'm going to be at 1st Formation. Mm-hmm. Your shit better be straight. And I was like, oh, I got this motherfucker. So according to back and then, AR-670-1, the way your uniform is supposed to be worn is how placed on body. It is not to be ironed. It's not to be starched. It's not to have any creases in it. Mm-hmm. So I literally threw it in the dryer, freaking dried it. I looked like a wrinkled grenade just hit me. And your shoes are not supposed to be glossed. They are only to be shined because it damages the boots, right? Your hat is to be placed on head and is to be worn as landed on head. I look like a hot mess. He showed up. He's expecting everybody. He came to me. He's like, what in the fuck is wrong with you? I had my AR-670-1 with me.
Just ready.
Oh, dude. I got smoked for about an hour and a half. He damn near killed me. And my colonel was like, Marquez, you can't do that to the CSM in front of everybody. He goes, yes, you are correct, but you can't. And I was like, why not? He goes, but look what happened to your day. I was like, well, I didn't have to go to the motor pool. I didn't have to do certain things. It's all good for me, right? But I never understood the bullshit.
Yeah.
Right? I'm not going to play your game.
Double percentage bullshit.
Mm-mm. I wasn't going
to
do it.
Which I am big about whether it be business, whether it be just talking to people. I try to help people learn that. Like, hey, if you're ever in that kind of world, it should always be explained. Like, hey, this is business first. All right, business done. All right, now it's personal. Hey, I love you. Everything's cool.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just business. That's not personal. That's just business. And a lot of people don't know how to do that. They kind of use that whole bravado, like, well, if you want to get promoted, I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't
know what you lost me at that.
Exactly.
Once you bring, you lost me.
I'm like, fuck you.
No.
I'm like, oh, okay, you want to pay that bullshit. Oh, okay.
Yeah, eat a dick.
Yeah.
No. It's not going down.
But damn, bro, we could definitely talk for hours and hours. Like I was telling us there. Watch out, because this is about to be a good long fucking talk. I definitely have to have you on here for another part. We got to go more into the your prison. Actual, see what exactly you can tell me, of course.
I can definitely explain what went on the inside, how corrupted California is. Definitely the social stigmas, how what people perceive prison to be versus the reality of it. And some of the stuff that goes down, or at least used to go down, not so much anymore. Mm-hmm. Inmates have more rights than civilians.
Gotcha.
Full on downright. Yeah.
It's crazy.
One of the biggest things is like inmate activist groups, right? Mm-hmm. They are a complete utter joke, right? Administration's utter joke. It's bad.
Mm-hmm.
It is definitely bad, but the old corrections, it was a blast. The new corrections. Oh, my God.
I got a couple friends doing corrections, and I can already kind of see where the difference is from just where you tell me right there to what he was telling me. I was like, oh, wow. That's crazy.
When I was at Salinas Valley, we were like rated the number one most dangerous prison in the nation for like 10 years.
Damn.
My my third day there, it was a 1,200 man riot.
Damn.
1,100 man riot. And yeah, we had three cops walk off that day. They're like, what? Oh, it's like, what? It looked Braveheart, dude. Oh, yeah. It was pretty bonkers. But yeah, I'd definitely come back and tell you about some of that stuff.
All right, brother. It's so always last minute here. Tell the audience, of course, where they can find you with the website, with the tactical gear, if you're still doing it.
I'm the man behind the man. I got some projects coming up, which may require me to move to Tennessee. I still work with some companies, but I'm just the guy behind the guy. I'm a big functional tactical apparel. Not so much apparel, but bad guy. Mostly into covert operation equipment. But my Instagram, I don't even know what it is.
Is it like take?
Oh, take my strong hand?
There you go.
Take my strong hand. I'm pretty sure you guys know what the reference for that is. It's probably one of the funniest scenes ever.
Always.
Hands down. Amazing. But I say to myself, if I can ever help anybody out there, duly hit me up. You guys have ideas that you want to put in the apparel company or the tactical company, hit me up. It's a very hard, close-knit industry to get into. You better get into it with money.
Yeah.
A lot of it. But, yeah, that's... I don't really do too much social media. I kind of stay to myself, as you know.
It's all good, though, man.
I kind of do myself.
It's all good. Just those little things that you can always just... Somebody needs to talk.
Yeah,
always help, bro. But all right, brother. Thank you so much, bro.
Hell yeah, Dougie. We'll be right back.